This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program. On tonight's program, we'll have an excerpt from Tell Somebody's Tom Clammers interview with Move to Amend spokesperson David Cobb, an excerpt from a talk by peace activist John Deere, an Affordable Care Act update, and a global warming corner. First, Move to Amend spokesperson David Cobb.
It's always a pleasure to be on People's Radio, and I know that KKFI, as non-corporately filtered news, information, and analysis, as a place where real conversations worthy of telling somebody takes place.
We've been billing you as the co-founder and spokesperson for Move to Amend. Can you tell me what is Move to Amend?
Sure, Tom. Move to Amend is a multiracial, multi-ethnic coalition of groups and individuals from across the country who have come together because we realize that a small ruling elite has stolen our sacred right to self-government, and it's going to take a movement to actually take it back. Specifically, our call is for a constitutional amendment to abolish two completely illegitimate court-created legal doctrines, not individual decisions, not individual laws, but actual doctrines. The first that needs to be abolished is the idea that a corporation must be treated as if it's a person with constitutional rights. The second, equally odious, also court-created idea, is the idea that money equals speech. You see, Tom, these two ideas taken together have stolen our sacred right to self-government. And as a lawyer, what really just chaps my hide is that the wealthy and the ruling elite use our legal system to legalize and legitimize the fact. We at Move to Amend say, ya basta, enough already. This is wrong. You see, if a corporation is a person with constitutional rights, it means that corporate lawyers can go into court to try to overturn any democratically enacted law that we pass to control corporate harm and abuse. For example, it means that environmental protection laws can be challenged, worker safety laws can be challenged, public health and public policy laws can be challenged, campaign finance laws can be challenged. Any law can be challenged on the idea that somehow our law violates a constitutional right held by a corporation. Tom, a corporation, whether it's a for-profit or a non-profit, is an artificial entity created under law. It has legal privileges under the law, but not rights. Because constitutional rights that belong to a human being are sacred. It means that the political process, the democratic process, cannot infringe upon the individual rights that an individual has. And that is a true statement. But a corporation does not have any such rights. That's the reason that Move to Amend is so explicit, to abolish both of those two legal doctrines. And you mentioned I was a co-founder. I'll take this opportunity to say that it's true that I was one of 12 people in 2010 who had the audacious idea to launch this campaign. Today, Tom, we have 335,000 people. We've helped 500 communities pass resolutions of support. We've put it on the ballot over 200 times across this country. By every conceivable objective measure, we're getting larger, stronger and better organized, and it sure feels good to win. Every single time that there has been systemic change in this country, it seemed impossible when it began. We are going to amend the United States Constitution. It's not if, it's when. And honestly, it comes back to your listeners. Again, if this conversation is inspiring you, if it's animating you, if it's provoking you to think that you want to get involved, well then get involved. www.movetoamend.org. I don't know how to say it more plainly or simply. We are living in a moment of crisis, ecological crisis, economic crisis, social justice crisis, cultural crisis, political crisis. But these crises are giving us an opportunity, Tom, that we have not seen in a long time, maybe none of us in our lives, an opportunity to actually make a play for real power. Not the individual actions that we can accomplish right now, but a collective action to create an entire new world. And again, I respect that there are people who are working on issues. I work on issues myself. I'm going to keep working on issues. I hope that your listeners will work on individual issues. And at the same time, let's recognize that there is a way to work on our issues in a way that empowers. Get out of our silos of just issue work and get in to a frame and a narrative about power and democracy, and all of a sudden, all of our work starts to look the same. And again, it cuts us in a position for liberals and conservatives, Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Libertarians, Independents, and Moderates to finally be able to work together to create the peaceful, just, democratic, and ecologically sustainable world we so desperately deserve that is so needed in this country. Here's the startling, sad, sobering reality. The United States of America is not now, nor has it ever been, a functioning democratic republic, but it can be. And that's the challenge for this generation.
David Cobb, movetoamend.org. And Kansas City, I believe, is very fortunate to have a pretty high-functioning and active local chapter of Move to Amend. You can find them at kcmovetoamend.org or kcmovetoamend on Facebook and get involved. David, so many times I've seen something like an event with a speaker like you, and people get fired up enough hearing about it to go and attend, and then they get fired up and nod their heads while they're there, and then after it's over, we've had a rousing event and a good time, and nothing happens.
I'm so glad that you lifted up the local Move to Amend, and I know that there's a whole group of folks, but I do want to just acknowledge and recognize Mary Lindsay, who's the person that I've been working with so much and so often, to acknowledge just how well she has really been part of this process, and to say this, we are committed to action after I leave. And again, we've helped 500 communities pass resolutions of support in Move to Amend. We have put it on the ballot in 200 different communities. We have helped thousands of people understand just what corporate personhood means and what money of speech means. We will help you be able to call in to talk radio and write letters to the editor and get involved in local campaigns. I don't care whether they're a Democrat or a Republican or an Independent. We'll help you with a Pledge to Amend campaign. We'll help you with a Resist to Amend campaign. See, we have concrete tools that we will teach you how to use. Move to Amend is not just an inspirational speech. It is also a heartfelt call to action. And we will put you in action if you come out and visit with us.
And once again, David Cobb will be coming to Kansas City Tuesday, April 22nd, 7 p.m., Pearson Auditorium at UMKC, 5100 Rock Hill Road, Kansas City, Missouri.
You can hear the David Cobb interview in its entirety on Thursday morning, 9 a.m. on Tell Somebody. You can also hear David Cobb in person on Tuesday, April 22nd, 7 p.m. at Pearson Auditorium on the UMKC campus. This event is sponsored by KC Move to Amend and the UMKC Economics Club. Next up is an excerpt of a speech by John Deere, an American Catholic priest, Christian pacifist, author, and lecturer. John Deere has been arrested over 75 times for civil disobedience. Special thanks to KKFI's Mike Murphy for recording this speech at the Community Christian Church on April 2nd at an event sponsored by PeaceWorks KC.
I just have to tell you, I have such mixed feelings coming to Kansas City. And I thought I would just be vulnerable and tell you that. The Kansas City plant, nuclear weapons development, right here in the heart of America. Now I'm just going to go even farther. Harry Truman. You know, for me, as I remember the day he died, and I was asking him about this, you know, I don't know what happened to me. I'm 54 years old, but I think I was a kid, and I'm going, he died in his sleep at the house, I think, in Independence. And he vaporized hundreds of thousands of people. But hey, I'm not condemning him or judging him or pointing. I'm just saying he's a symbol of everything we're against. And he's a good man, and he did a lot of good works. but he's the culture. So I went to the house on the way here today. It was really scary for me. It was like a nonviolent action. All I could do was sit in the car and look at it. And then I thought, well, I might as well. Things are bad in Kansas City. I went to the museum because you can go to the grave for free. And he's been haunting me my whole life. I don't know how you all do that. You're living in the shadow of Harry Truman. And I prayed at his grave. And I forgave him. And I said, my friends and I, Georgia and I, and all of you, are spending our lives trying to undo the evil you're doing. You've done. And we're all part. And God of peace, give us the gift of nuclear disarmament. While I'm so discouraged, I'm so inspired by all of you. Because you are standing up and saying no to drones nearby, to Whiteman, to Leavenworth, where Bradley Manning is, to the Kansas City plant where they build 85% of parts of nuclear weapons. And what I read was it's really a cutting-edge uranium process that they're trying to upgrade. This is great. This is really important, what we're trying to do. And I thank you for it. I was thinking all day about this. Because while Truman was celebrating the vaporization of hundreds of thousands of people, there was another great person. Well, there's so many, Dorothy Day and all, but Mahatma Gandhi around the world. From that day to an hour within his death, was speaking against nuclear weapons in the name of God and offering a whole other vision of life, which was what Jesus tried to do. And that's what I want to reflect with you, if you can stand it. Some thoughts about violence and this world of war, nonviolence and the hope for peace, a little bit about my book, The Nonviolent Life, and some of our Christian roots for doing all of this, and then we'll have time for questions and comments and reflections and rebuttal. How does that sound, Georgia? Okay. And by the end of the evening, we will have resolved everything. just to share a little bit of it, for me, I invite you as I'm reflecting to reflect on your own life. What happened to you? How are you moving out of the culture of war and violence into the new life of peace and nonviolence? It's such an important question. And it's a great way to look at life. We're turning and waking up, and how from this day forward to our last day on earth, we can go deep into peace and nonviolence, and our lives can make a difference to build a movement for a new future of peace and to serve the God of peace. Isn't that a great way to look at life? As I said, I think I'm 54, and my journey happened before I entered the Jesuits. I went on a pilgrimage to Israel to see where Jesus lived by myself. I was going to hitchhike for 3 months. Only the week I left, Israel invaded Lebanon. You may remember the Summer War of 1982. It was all orchestrated at the Pentagon. We now know we facilitated the killing of 60,000 people. And all the Holy Land tours were canceled. And I hitchhiked through Israel. And I was camping out illegally for 2 weeks by the Sea of Galilee. And it was so beautiful. And then I visited the Chapel of the Beatitudes, if you've been there. The little church on the North Shore. They had the Beatitudes on the wall. Hunger and thirst for justice. Blessed are the peacemakers. And love your enemies. And I was utterly overwhelmed by this. And what happened to me was I thought, I think this guy really wants us to do this stuff. What? I know that's so stupid to say that. Like, nobody said, he doesn't actually want us to do that. It can't be true. Do anything, do everything but that. Hunger and thirst for justice. Be a peacemaker. Love your enemy. Just as I was standing at the balcony, coming to grips with that, all these Israeli jets fell from the sky, breaking the sound barrier. Boom, boom, boom. And they swooped down over the Sea of Galilee, flew over my head and dropped a whole bunch of bombs and killed people 15 miles away. It changed my life. Later, I realized it had been happening every hour the whole time I was there. I just wasn't thinking. Who cares? Who cares about the Kansas City plant? You just go through your life until you wake up. And I thought, right, well, I'm going to get with the program and try to do like Georgia and all of you and just do what we can. I mean, I went and sat at the feet of Daniel and Philip Berrigan. Dan was like, I wanted to ask him the meaning of life. He's 92 and in a nursing home now. You know, the great Berrigans, the heroes of peace. And I said, what's the point of all this again, Dan? And he said this beautiful thing to me. All you have to do is make your story fit into Jesus' story. And I thought, oh, that's wonderful. I thought he was going to say end all wars and nuclear weapons. But on second thought, what he said was even harder. Then I went and was with Philip Berrigan, and he's smoking a cigarette, and he goes, go get arrested, kid, at the Pentagon and report back to me. You're with the Berrigans, you start getting arrested, now you've heard I've been arrested like 75 or 80 times, and I'm a full-fledged ex-con, I can never vote again, the government considers me as high a terrorist as you can get, can't travel to a lot of countries, I'm under very serious surveillance. I've been in and out of court since my first arrest at the Pentagon 30 years ago. And I have a serious problem with recidivism now, George. Thank you. And like some of you here, too, I went to El Salvador and lived and worked with the Jesuits who were later assassinated. That was really life-changing, the refugee camp. And that led me to go with Philip Berrigan onto the Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, like our friend Carl Cabot here. And we walked onto the largest Air Force base in the country with the F-15 nuclear-capable fighter bombers 20 years ago. Incredible experience. It's like three O'Hare airports. At 4 in the morning, there are tens of thousands of soldiers milling about. What do you do for peace? We walked right through the middle of it, came up to one of the fighter bombers, each pulled out a hammer, and I went up to the side and swung once on the fighter bomber like that. Didn't even chip the paint. My friend Bruce's hammer broke in half. These things are so indestructible. And as I said to the judge later, Your Honor, just doing what it says in the Bible. The Holy Prophet said someday these people are going to come along and beat their swords into plowshares and study war no more. Is there an issue here? Is there a problem with that? I'm just doing what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, in this famous commandment. Love your enemies. Don't nuke them. That's the actual translation from the original Greek. Yeah, that didn't go over well with the judge. We faced 20 years in prison. You know, like Sister Megan and the current plowshares. Ours was about the 50 of them, about 100 plowshares that Carl has done and others. And Phil and I and Bruce, we ended up in a little cell about this big. We never left the cell. Almost 9 months. It was really a horrific experience for me. And that's everybody's experience is different. We were in county jails in rural North Carolina. And the walls were closing in because I was facing, I thought, at least 5 years. But we took out the Bible and we started with chapter 1, verse 1 of the Gospel of Mark, and we get about three sentences and the heavens opened and all the scriptures were explained. And then we took a piece of Wonder Bread, which we got for breakfast every day, and on Mondays we had those little plastic cups with the grape juice. Remember, we used to get those on the airplanes. And we found that if you put the grape juice in the top of the toilet in the back, it ferments quite nicely over time. And we broke the bread and passed the cup, and it was like God was right with us. It was the worst experience of my life, and hands down the greatest experience. I always say there's an inverse proportionality to this work for peace. The more you and I try to do, which is what I've done, I mean, years of Jesuit training, where we're good Americans, we're going to end these problems, which we have to try to do. We organize and speak. It's like the less happens. And the more you let go and risk your life and walk forward in faith and take risks for justice and peace, the more happens. Now, we get out of the way and God can move and miracles can happen. I've seen it.
The first enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act has finished. The enmity toward President Obama, which was vowed by the Republican leadership about the time of Obama's inauguration, has continued now for 6 years. However, despite that,
And despite the misleading, untruthful, and nauseating attacks on the Affordable Care Act, in spite of all that, over 7 million people have enrolled in health care insurance under the law. Many hardworking, underpaid Americans now have health care insurance for the first time. Many who did have insurance before now have reduced premiums. They and many millions of Medicare members now have no-cost annual wellness exams. Millions have received rebates on their premiums from their insurance companies, which had spent too little of the company's money on care for customers. Many Americans who have worried for years about what they would do if a serious health problem arose have now relaxed, knowing they can get care when they need it. And they may now live longer, as reducing stress increases longevity. I read a short report from some of the navigators, those people who help people enroll, about their experiences with people who were trying to get an insurance plan. Those navigators reported real surprise at the ignorance of many about the act and about the marketplace. It's discouraging that after 3 years plus of educational efforts of the people locally in the Affordable Care Act education group headed by Alice Kitchen and Sarah Starnes and similar groups around the nation, that all that work has not replaced the fog of misleading and distorted propaganda which has flooded the nation since the spring of 2008. The Kansas City Star article on April the 1st confirmed that, stating that navigators have been surprised by how poorly informed some would-be enrollees were despite 4 years of publicity about the individual health insurance mandate and its March 31 deadline. Well, we have that kind of evidence that the contest continues between those people who favor the flow of wealth and power and benefits into the hands of a few and those who favor a more just and equitable sharing of the nation's resources. Those of us who believe everyone should have health care must continue to inform and educate and persuade our friends and neighbors about the law and the benefits which people have already experienced and will continue to enjoy. And we must develop and support candidates who can be elected to improve the law and push for change in financial and other national policies in order to ensure the availability of good jobs and of well-educated people to fill them. And perhaps above all right now, we need to build connections with other activist groups whose desire for change is as strong as ours and whose issues are tied to our issues through our commitments to democracy in practice as well as in theory. Our Move On group has joined with Move to Amend on several events, just as we have rallied with a number of teacher groups. These events with Move to Amend have developed connections and cooperation and friendship which have promise of strength and knowledge to be used in future collaborative change efforts. Through setbacks and disappointments, we have made important advancements. 7 million people who have needed health care now have access to it.
Comments have been brought to you by Frank Neff of JOCO Move On. You were invited to join us and view our Facebook, JOCO Move On. Get more information about what's going on and what efforts that you might be able to help with. Thank you.
This is Dave Mitchell with Global Warming Corner. When it comes to the issue of global warming, I think it is fair to say a great many people, perhaps even a significant majority, feel an essential powerlessness to have any influence on the problem. The strong tendency is to throw up one's hands and basically give up. The problem is global in scope, requiring humanity to completely transform the ways in which energy is generated and used. This transformation must be driven by a complete paradigm shift, a paradigm which thoroughly recognizes the Earth's biosphere has limits which cannot be crossed without ultimately serious consequences. A paradigm which drives humanity to clearly understand these limits and, more importantly, structure our collective existence to live within the ability of our biosphere to support us. In other words, very real, actual, true, worldwide sustainability. In his book, The Dream of the Earth, Thomas Berry refers to this process as the coming ecological age. Ushering in this new age, there must be an accurate understanding of our scientific, technological entrancement and our industrially driven consumer society. In other words, truth-telling about the destructive power of our current historical paradigm. Only in this way will our fatal attraction, quote-unquote, be broken, supplanted by a radical change in consciousness, the need to create a new sense of being human, to truly understand our interdependence with the web of life. Thomas Berry quotes, "This brings about a completely new sense of reality and of value. This new consciousness will provide the power for psychic and social transformations at the order of magnitude required." Take heart out there, and I say this to myself as well. There are positive changes happening all over the world, green shoots, preparing the ground for future transformations. For example, Bangladesh, one of the poorest countries in the world, has provided 1.4 million rural poor with household solar power as of 2012. This is through a program with the World Bank. Germany has passed a law in 1997, the Directive of Electricity Production from Renewable Energy Sources. How's that for a title? From 2000 to 2012, renewable energy went from 6.3% to about 25% of their energy portfolio. Very impressive. Portugal's achievement is even more amazing. In 2000, the government decided to support massive development of alternative energy. In April 2013, Think Progress reports Portugal achieved 70% of its energy from primarily hydropower and wind in the first quarter of 2013. In the 1970s, Denmark invested heavily in wind power, which provides 30% of their current electricity. Their goal is to achieve 50% by 2020, with a long-range plan to be fossil fuel-free by 2050. Here in the U.S., perhaps the most resistant nation in the world to global warming realities, 30 states and the District of Columbia have enforceable renewable portfolio standards. Iowa gets about 25% of its electricity from wind. California has the goal of 33% renewable energy by 2020. Believe it or not, Kansas passed a renewable portfolio standard in 2009 with a goal of 20% renewables by 2020. Kansas, of all places. As noted in another Global Warming Corner, there are unknown millions worldwide who are modifying their lifestyles, attempting to tread more lightly on the earth. Their collective effect is completely unknown, but we can be certain if hundreds of millions modify their lifestyles enough, there will be a collective effect. Guess what? You, yes, you, can become one of the hundreds of millions who will be changing their lifestyles. To get you started, here are some suggestions. The planet will love you more if you switch to CFL light bulbs. Wash your clothes in cold water. Turn down your hot water heater to 120 degrees. Install a programmable thermostat. Have a home energy audit performed. Eat less meat, particularly beef. Become a vegetarian. Buy local and organic foods as much as possible. Avoid consumption of fast food. Take the bus, bicycle, or walk. Buy a scooter. Buy a hybrid. Don't have a car at all. Travel less. Take the train. Fly only when absolutely necessary. Recycle. Buy according to your need. Buy used when possible. Suggestions such as these will get you started. You're creative. Find other ways to reduce your footprint. Be one of those hundreds of millions to come. Political advocacy is also a must, but this will have to be explored in another episode. Until next time, this is David Mitchell with Global Warming Corner.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activists in our community. If you'd like more information or like to comment on this program, call Bill Claus at 816-994-7869.